Support for This Day in Esoteric Political History comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. And they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So, when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/thisday. That's odoo.com/thisday. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avrigan. This day, October 25th, 2002, 11 days before the 2002 midterm elections, Minnesota Senator Paul Wellstone died in a plane crash in Eveleth, Minnesota. The senator's wife, Sheila, their daughter, Marcia, and three staff aides were also killed, along with the pilot and co-pilot of that small plane that crashed. Wellstone had served two terms as senator of Minnesota, was running for his third in a close race in a very interesting 2002 midterm election. We've wanted to talk about Wellstone for a while on this show, and we've received a bunch of emails from folks asking us to talk about Wellstone, so thank you for those. To my mind, Wellstone, kind of a forgotten figure for many in Democratic politics, but someone who had a big impact in the 90s and the 2000s and beyond, and we'll talk about sort of the legacy of politicians like Paul Wellstone. Here to do that, as always, is Nicole Hemmer of Columbia. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Jody.
So I want to start with just a painting a sketch of Paul Wellstone as a person and Paul Wellstone and his politics, and then we'll talk about his legacy. You know, I will just share that my folks are sort of active in lefty politics and in the sort of DC think tank world. And when Wellstone died in 2002, you know, I was on the younger side. I don't think I had a sense at the time of who he was, but I just remember sort of my parents' generation, this death really hitting them hard in progressive politics. And I mean, that's honestly kind of one of the reasons I want to do this, is just because I just remember like the feeling among progressives when this happened. And obviously the death of a prominent politician is tragic, but I don't know. What is your sense of kind of how he like mattered, or why there was this sort of deep affection for Wellstone?
Well, I will say I also don't have a strong memory of this moment. I was a little too young, but I was texting with a friend who's a little older this morning. And when I said we'd be talking about Wellstone, he texted back the crying emoji. Because there is, especially for folks, I think now in their 50s and 60s who were active in progressive politics, Wellstone was their kind of hope for the future. This was a generation that was probably a little too young for Bobby Kennedy's run in 1968 and the tragic end of that story, and that didn't necessarily have a ton of progressive politicians in the Democratic Party to draw from. It was a moment when the Democratic Party during the Bill Clinton era had come to restrain itself more in its lefty politics. There was less room for progressive politics in the party. And so somebody like Wellstone was the great hope for the future, the post-Clinton future, was riding on Paul Wellstone's shoulders.
Yeah, and I think that sense, I mean, obviously when someone dies relatively young, you always have that sense of what could have been, that loss. But yeah, that's the feeling I got, just this what could have been. We lost someone who who I think a community that felt, as you said, under siege a little bit, or didn't have its real lane in the 90s, lost its champion. So let's talk about that. And I guess, you know, we can do it as Wellstone's political career, but then also how that reflects progressivism, especially in the 90s. He was one of few senators who opposed both Iraq wars. And it was kind of one of the last things he did. Obviously, the 2002 midterms happening in the wake of 9/11, as we were heading to war with Iraq, he was a very vocal opponent of that. But he had been a vocal opponent of the first Bush's efforts in Iraq as well. What other things are part of his political legacy?
So I think it's important to understand how he came up, because he fits in this model of a kind of nerdy progressivism that had a real appeal. He had a PhD in political science. He was a college professor. He was a community organizer. He was somebody who really came up through the grassroots of lefty politics. So up through like labor union organizing and community organizing. And he brings those lefty politics to the Senate in a kind of a surprise victory in 1990. He was the only non-incumbent to win in the Senate in 1990 in a pretty close race. And he brings, again, this opposition to the war, but even, you know, kind of more progressive politics by the time 2002 rolls around. So he had initially voted for the Defense of Marriage Act, he says in 2001 in a book called Conscience of a Liberal, which we can talk about, that he was wrong to do that. And coming out in favor of marriage equality in 2001 put you pretty far on the left in the Democratic Party on social policy.
Yeah. And then certainly trade issues. You know, to my mind, when you think about the progressive movement throughout the 90s, I think a lot of it is really about trade. And, you know, I think people forget now how strong there was, for instance, opposition to NAFTA, to sort of what was deemed neoliberal economic policies at the time, to the Clinton triangulation and the Clinton sort of neoliberal economic policy. I think he was certainly a vocal champion of that as well.
Yeah, it's a real split in the Democratic Party that persists till this day, right? Like, right. You mentioned NAFTA, but we could also mention something like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which really divided a Democratic Party between somebody like Barack Obama, who was pro sort of free trade policies, and people like, say, Harry Reid, who was the Senate Minority Leader, who came out pretty strongly against TPP because of his preference for more protectionist legislation.
Yeah. And so what is your, maybe this is a naive question, but is it just that Bill Clinton was such an overwhelming figure? Bill Clinton obviously won two elections through triangulation, famously, that we're only able to hold kind of one story of what Democratic politics are in the 90s. And so we kind of forget a little bit about this progressive wing?
I mean, yes and no. There had been a move in the Democratic Party throughout the 80s and 90s to try to move it in this more neoliberal or this more centrist, moderate, triangulate-y direction. And you certainly had people who were still progressive stalwarts. I mean, you had people like Jesse Jackson, while Stone would work on his campaign in the 1980s, who was kind of the leading edge for many Democrats of the progressive wing of the party. But it was in eclipse. And not just because of Clinton, but because of the entire sort of new Democrat, Atari Democrat framework or wing of the party.
So let's do a little bit more on Wellstone himself, just a fascinating figure, and then, you know, and his death. And then I do want to come back to some of this sort of political legacy of him. You mentioned he was sort of, what did you say, goofy a little bit?
I mean, goofy,
I think
nerdy.
That's, yeah, a little nerdy at the time and in his eulogies. And when people remember him, they often call him that happy warrior. I kind of think of him as a goofy warrior almost. And you watch videos of him. There's a lot of Bernie in there, right? There is a lot of this like goofy professor, but still very like passionate and fiery, but disarming in a sense. And it's a very, you know, I know Bernie's from Vermont, but it's a very like northern kind of sensibility, I think, of, you know, and so it's not a surprise that he comes from Minnesota. But I mean, there is a sort of really compelling goofiness there.
Yeah. I mean, you also kind of see it in Howard Dean as well, and another yep. Vermonter. This kind of, I would say like this kind of goofy white progressivism. And the reason that I say that is because to my mind, like the clear successor for somebody like Wellstone is Barack Obama, a community organizer, college professor who comes up right. as an outsider with progressive politics, not the same slate of politics as we talked about with things like trade, but who opposed the Iraq War, right? And was able to use that as his platform. And you can kind of imagine how different 2008 or even the 2004 Democratic National Convention would have looked if somebody like Wellstone was there as sort of the lefty mm-hmm. progressive voice that Barack Obama, I wouldn't quite call him a lefty, but like a progressive voice that would emerge in that moment.
Right. But of course, you know, Obama had that sort of slickness, I think, in a you know, compelling way that he wasn't rough around the edges in the
right.
way that Wellstone was or Dean was. You know, I think you're right. It's sort of a farmer's markety kind of white professor type of thing. Though I will say Cornel West sort of embodies that to me too. And he's, you know, he's not white, but he has
sure.
sort of like shambolic, like papers falling out of his notebook kind of vibe to him. But you know, I think if you talk about both a political and a kind of aesthetic inheritor to Paul Wellstone, it really is Al Franken.
Mm.
And so Al Franken, senator, obviously from Minnesota. We'll talk about what happened in Actually, do you want to quickly, before we get to Franken, talk about what happened in 2002 so that we can paint the picture of how Franken then comes on the scene and picks up this mantle? So I mentioned it was a close election. Obviously, a candidate dies 11 days before the election. What comes next?
I mean, this is a huge shakeup to what was already a very close race. What the DFL, the Democratic Farm Labor Party, which is the Democratic Party in Minnesota, did was they reached back into their history and pulled Walter Mondale out of their hat and said, okay, Mondale is going to run for this now open Senate seat because they had, you know, somebody died 11 days before the election. They need somebody on that ticket. And ultimately, that ticket loses to Norm Coleman by a couple of points. And so here you see Al Franken as the direct successor in many ways of Paul Wellstone, because 6 years later, Al Franken runs for Wellstone's seat and by a margin of some 300 votes defeats Coleman.
Yeah, and people forget that Al Franken, 300 votes, is pretty amazing. Maybe we'll find a time to do that. But in this 2002 race, right, the Republicans hold the Senate, and it's just a two-vote margin, right? And again, there was no guarantee that Wellstone was going to win, but he was an incumbent. Incumbents have big advantages. He probably had a better chance than Mondale ended up having. So, I mean, it was a really close election, and I believe this was the last time, the 2002, in a midterm, that the party of the president ended up retaining both the House and the Senate, which just does not happen very often, right? Midterms famously are swing back in the other direction. So, you know, razor thin all around, razor thin in Minnesota itself. So certainly this had a big impact.
Yeah, I mean, even weirder than that, Jody, the president's party took the Senate.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah, flipped.
Which is extremely rare, because in midterm elections, the president's party almost always loses seats. And in this particular strange moment, you know, a year after the September 11 attacks, there were very different politics at play in a way. And the Wellstone death just made this an even stranger election.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the thing about his death that I think we should mention, and it does bring us then to do a little bit on Al Franken, but there's this very interesting kind of story that's told about Wellstone's memorial service. So as I gather, you know, it was obviously a big moment. There was a large memorial service. Tens of thousands of people were there. The entire kind of Democratic progressive movement was there to pay their respects, in addition to Minnesota politicians of all stripes, Republican, Democratic, all over the map. And a storyline emerged about this memorial service that it had become politicized. There were reports, and, you know, help me talk through this, but there were reports that that people had booed Republicans when they came up on stage. I think a couple speakers kind of said, like, let's win this election for Paul. You know, what was, I hate to say, even call it controversial, but, you know, what was the spun up controversy around his memorial, as far as you can tell?
If you want to take the hardest tack against it, you would say that they turned his memorial service into a campaign rally. This was the charge, that they were making overtly political speeches. Not surprising, like a week before the election, with a bunch of politicos who are speaking for somebody who is running a Senate campaign. Some Republicans who wanted to come weren't really invited because the Wellstone family said, no, we'd prefer you not be here. And there was even a moment, Jesse Ventura, who was governor at the time, which is a whole other episode in and of itself, but was said to have been so disgusted at the politics at display that instead of filling Wellstone's seat with a Democrat, he fills it with actually one of the guy who ran the political party that he was a part of.
You mean filling it for that small gap between when Coleman took over?
Yeah, yeah. So there's like a 2 month gap sure, where you need somebody in that seat, and he appoints the head of his political party to it.
Right. So, you know, in reading back about this, I mean, yeah, the so-called controversies were, as you described, you know, a little, let's win this for Paul, I think someone said a couple times on the stand, and then Jesse Ventura getting disgusted. You know, my basic take on this is, like, if someone has devoted their life to politics, it makes sense to me to talk about politics at their memorial service. So, you know, this charge of politicization just doesn't ring for me. Al Franken wrote a lot about this, and I think this was a real sort of moment for Al Franken in his political awakening, because he talked about how this to him was a moment where the move of using something politically when you complain about something being used politically kind of emerged. And you are, you know, you track sort of conservative media. Is this like this strikes me as a move, and both sides, I think, do it, but conservatives seem to have really picked up this notion of charging something as being politicized, and that, of course, is politicization in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's this idea that basically everything is political. So everything that your political opponent is doing is politicizing something. And this could be like talking about guns after something like the Sandy Hook massacre. It can be anything, right? The idea that you're speaking up in a moment that could be politically advantageous to you is going to be called politicizing it. And that assumption that every driver of a politician's actions is maximal political benefit. That's the baseline argument. And this is something that lives on in conservative media to this day. Not just that argument, but the Wellstone Memorial Service is something that Rush Limbaugh has talked about like in the last week.
Really?
Yes.
People still talk about the Wellstone Memorial Service.
Yes, as a sign
nothing
of how...
ever, nothing ever disappears right. in the Rush Limbaugh cinematic universe, huh?
It's kind of amazing how you get these repeat hits over and over again. And I would think like most people don't actually remember anything about the Wellstone Memorial Service at this point, but it comes to stand in for not even death is something that Democrats will allow to be free from politics. That's the main underlying argument. And so as we are closing this particular political season where... death has obviously been pretty central to the conversation. The idea that, oh, well, Democrats just politicize everything has been a kind of closing argument on the right, which is why we're hearing about Wellstone.
Yeah. So if we talk about Wellstone's successors or the people who picked up the sort of mantle of both his politics and his policy, you know, Al Franken certainly, I think, comes to mind. Franken held that seat, but also talked a lot about Wellstone as someone who helped in his political awakening. You know, Bernie Sanders, I think so as well. But when you look at some of the issues that we talked about earlier, you know, free trade, labor unions, I mean, this is so much the story of 2016 that you can actually draw that strain, and it splits both in one direction, that kind of upper Midwest progressivism splits, breaks towards Bernie Sanders, but then in the other direction, it absolutely breaks towards Donald Trump as well. And so I think this is just a reminder and a chance to sort of point that out, that maybe some of the folks who were Wellstoneites, maybe by 2016 would have found themselves voting for either Bernie or Trump.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible. That upper Midwest region is so interesting in terms of progressive politics. I mean, Minnesota has been punching above its weight for a very long time. People like Eugene McCarthy and Walter Mondale, Hubert Humphrey. But it also has had this sort of white populist conservative strain as well. And so I do think you see some really interesting political splits in the upper Midwest, which is why those states actually become so important in the 2016 election, right? Those thin marginal victories of not a huge number of voters, but enough voters who were swayed by trade policy, by racism, by sexism, by all kinds of things over to the Trump camp. There's a fungibility of politics there. And it would be interesting to find that Wellstone Trump crossover voter.
Yeah, I mean, there were certainly a lot of Obama-Trump crossover voters. I'm sure that exists. So as we start to wrap up, I mean, you did mention some of the interesting names that have come through Minnesota politics. I mean, it is quite a list of prominent politicians of many stripes, I think, from Minnesota. So, you know, I don't know. Is it fair to say Minnesota is one of these states that appears to be kind of punching above its weight a little bit politically?
I would say so. Certainly in the last 50 years, Minnesota has been churning out some national level politicians, and a lot of them have been in this progressive mold. But, you know, we mentioned Jesse Ventura, a sort of progenitor to our reality television politicians, but also somebody like Amy Klobuchar,
yeah.
Right? She's not that progressive. I would say that she's more in the new Democrat model than these kind of lefty progressive politicians. But she's been an outsized figure on the national stage in a way that I think speaks to the continued importance and power of Minnesota politics.
Yeah. I mean, you just list off the, you know, Humphrey, Mondale, McCarthy, Franken, Ventura, Wellstone, Klobuchar. Like, that's a healthy, you know, group of people.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And I mean, certainly Wisconsin obviously has a deep political legacy as well. But I think it's sort of fascinating. I'm sure we'll get lots of letters from Minnesotans saying, you don't understand our state, or our state, it isn't punching above its weight. That is its weight. Okay, well, we will leave it there. I just want to say again, thanks to everyone who kind of wrote us about Paul Wellstone, and you know, it took us a while to get to it, but we've had this on our list for a while, so we really do appreciate all the emails and suggestions, and you should keep those coming. Okay, Nicole Hemmer, thanks to you as always.
Thank you, Jody.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of the Radiotopia Network from PRX. Our producer and researcher is Jacob Feldman. Our other producer is Brittany Brown. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
This Reagan block administration can spend billions of dollars on Star Wars in space. It can spend that kind of money to grow food and feed the hungry right here on Earth.
Radiotopia.